And so the question came up a few years ago for the bar, does this rule apply to exculpatory information that comes to light post-conviction? And the way that came up was through some litigation that we were involved in. A grievance was filed in 2015, and then the litigation was in 2016. And that case involved a defendant who had pled guilty to possession of a controlled substance several years prior. And then years later, it was discovered that the chemist who ran the labs in his case had falsified lab reports in a lot of other cases. Big problem. It wasn't clear whether his case was affected, but that came to be the issue. And in that case, DPS notified the DA's offices, any office that may have a case that was implicated, and then it was up to the prosecutors to make notifications to the defendants. I'm sorry, my throat is really raspy today. And so in that particular case, the prosecutor's offices were notified, and then, like I said, they were responsible for notifying defendants. And in this particular case, the defendant was not notified for approximately a year. And so he filed a grievance and alleged that that was untimely disclosure under Rule 309D. The commission filed suit on that case, and it went into district court. And the counsel for the prosecutors argued a Rule 91A motion to dismiss and said that, you know, Rule 309D doesn't apply post-conviction. It doesn't impose any duties on prosecutors once the trial is complete. We argued against that, and we lost at the trial court level. We appealed that case to the 14th Court of Appeals, and they affirmed. And in doing so, they did a statutory construction analysis of Rule 309D, and they looked at several things. First, they looked at the plain language of the rule itself. Thank you. And they said, if you look at the language of Rule 309, not just 309D, but all the provisions, but particularly 309D, you'll see that the phraseology looks to be speaking to obligations that occur pre-conviction, such as the accused. Obviously, someone who's been convicted is no longer referred to as the accused. So that was one indicator they looked at. Then they looked at the fact that Rule 309D was modeled after the ABA Model Rule 3.8. And most of the jurisdictions do model their ethical rules after the ABA's model rules, and as did Texas. And up until 2008, Texas's Rule 309D was identical to the Model Rule 3.8. But in 2008, the ABA amended their Model Rule 3.8 and specifically added a post-conviction duty of disclosure on prosecutors. And in doing so, they acknowledged that their prior rule didn't really have that in there, that they were now fixing that omission. Well, Texas never followed suit and amended its 309D to follow suit. So the court looked at that and said, you know, this isn't binding on us, but it is sort of indicative of the fact that your rule doesn't contain that requirement because you modeled your rule after them. They say their rule didn't have it until they amended their rule. So another thing that they looked at. They then said, the 14th court said, another thing is you can't point us to any other cases where you've ever, you know, argued this successfully. And that's true. Up until that point, we hadn't litigated a case that had applied Rule 309D in that way. And so they looked at all these things and they said, we don't find a violation on these facts. But, and this was a very big but, they said, our holding should not be misinterpreted as a conclusion that prosecutors owe no duty to disclose exculpatory information post-conviction. And so it's kind of an about-face. It's kind of startling when you read that because it seems like that's what they're saying. But in fact, the court was really limiting their holding to the specific facts of the case. And they were saying, our holding is based on what a reasonable lawyer would have understood his or her duty to be at the time of the conduct in this case. And at the time of the conduct in this case, it was before the enactment of the Michael Morton Act. They said that statute, the Michael Morton Act, very well may change the analysis in future cases. Because now prosecutors are put on notice of this duty to disclose information post-conviction that's exculpatory. And so, and the way they worked that into their analysis is they said, interpretation of the ethics rules is informed by other laws that define the specific obligations of lawyers and that define substantive and procedural law. And so now that the Michael Morton Act is in place, that may very well inform our interpretation next time or another court's interpretation of Rule 309D in the future. And so I just am talking about this because I think if you don't read the opinion carefully, you might think it stands for the proposition that Rule 309D does not contain this duty to disclose information that comes to light post-conviction. I think that would be a mistake. I think the court's holding was limited to the specific facts of that case. And keep in mind, the facts of that case did not involve a complete failure to disclose information. It was based on an argument that disclosure was untimely. And I say that because I think should another case come along now that the Michael Morton Act is in place, and possibly a more egregious case that involves a failure to disclose at all, that you may very well see a different result from the courts.